In 1973, oil analyst Charlie Maxwell traveled to Detroit with an urgent warning about impending energy changes. His reception told the whole story. Polite disinterest at Chrysler, meetings with powerless junior executives at Ford, and at GM only a showcase of their newest gas guzzlers. Months later, when the Yom Kippur War triggered an oil embargo that quadrupled prices, Maxwell's warning proved prophetic. Years later, Chrysler's Tom Killefer confessed, "You're the one man I hate to see. God, I still remember that warning." This moment perfectly captures the stunning hubris of an American auto industry that had dominated for decades but refused to see the threats on the horizon. Why were these titans of industry so blind to the changing world around them? The answer lies in a complex story of innovation, arrogance, cultural differences, and economic transformation that would forever change America's industrial landscape. Henry Ford transformed both automobiles and manufacturing, legitimately claiming to have invented the modern age. Starting from humble beginnings, he revolutionized production efficiency, reducing Model T assembly time from 12.5 hours to just 1 minute within 12 years. Ford's vision was a car for the masses, not the elite. He relentlessly cut prices, understanding that lower costs meant more buyers. The Model T embodied this philosophy: simple, durable, and affordable. Ford grasped a fundamental economic principle. As both manufacturer and employer, he could create customers by expanding working-class buying power. However, Ford's determination eventually became his downfall. He stubbornly clung to the Model T, focusing solely on manufacturing efficiency while ignoring technological advances. When engineers proposed improvements in 1912, he violently destroyed their prototype. By the 1920s, Ford had lost touch with reality, running the company through increasingly irrational decisions. His son Edsel, despite being a capable executive who advocated for crucial modernizations like hydraulic brakes and better engines, faced constant public humiliation from his father. When Henry Ford died, the company was losing $10 million monthly and nearing bankruptcy. Post-war Japan was devastated, with widespread scarcity forcing even aristocrats to trade heirlooms for food. Under General MacArthur's occupation, Japan underwent radical reforms, including land redistribution, women's rights, labor laws, and wealth redistribution. As the Cold War emerged, American policy shifted to position Japan as a strategic Asian ally. Japan's recovery strategy centered on learning from foreign experts and adapting their knowledge. At Nissan, American inventor William R. Gorham played a crucial role, helping create Japan's first assembly line and the first Datsun car by 1933. After World War II, impressed by American technological superiority, Japan became an even more dedicated student of Western expertise. The nation's unity enabled long-term economic planning despite public sacrifices. Japan developed a unique state-guided communal capitalism, strategically channeling talent into engineering and doubling its engineering graduates in the post-war decade, a decision that proved tremendously valuable. At Ford, Charles Thornton's Whiz Kids transformed management through data analysis, led by Robert McNamara, who prioritized statistics over car design. The finance team built influence by recruiting business school graduates and placing protégés in key positions, creating tension with the blue-collar factory veterans. By the early 50s, finance had centralized power in Detroit, strictly controlling spending across plants. In contrast, Nissan's Yutaka Katayama took a different approach in America. Breaking from traditional Japanese insularity, he built a network of motivated dealers with better profit margins than Detroit offered. Recognizing America's poor auto service, he positioned Nissan to serve customers seeking reliable, efficient cars with quality service. His vision culminated in the 1968 Datsun 510, an affordable sports sedan that combined European engineering with Japanese manufacturing. Modeled after the BMW 1600, but priced at one-third the cost, it featured advanced technical specifications and sold over 300,000 units in 5 years, establishing Datsun as a formidable competitor. By early 1982, Detroit faced its third consecutive bleak winter. The auto industry was in freefall, with over a quarter million auto workers unemployed. The ripple effects devastated the entire Midwest industrial heartland as small factories making auto parts shut down across multiple states. Most alarming was the breach of faith with American consumers, who increasingly believed Japanese cars were of higher quality, not just cheaper and more fuel efficient. Despite Japan's voluntary export ceiling, Detroit continued to lose market share as Americans turned to imports. The early 1980s revealed America's diminishing industrial strength. Manufacturing had become costly and difficult, with eroding quality standards. Management had grown bloated, labor costs were high, and few executives had factory experience. Money now begat money through leveraging and arbitrage rather than production. Those making money weren't producing things. Those producing things weren't making money. A dismaying equation for a once colossally productive nation. As financier Felix Rahatan observed, in just 25 years, we have gone from the American century to the American crisis. That is an astonishing turnaround, perhaps the shortest parabola in history. In 1983, the American auto industry celebrated renewed sales amid falling interest rates and oil prices. However, Wall Street analysts noted this recovery largely stemmed from Japanese import restrictions, which artificially protected pricing by nearly $1,000 per car. While some American executives adopted quality programs and consulted W. Edwards Deming, previously embraced by Japan, Japanese manufacturers continued advancing through intense domestic competition. By 1985, visiting American executives witnessed the stark contrast. Japanese plants operated without repair bays as workers served as inspectors, while American plants needed massive repair areas. Quality issues consumed 20 to 40% of American automakers' revenues, roughly equivalent to the Japanese price advantage. Despite America's natural advantages in land, resources, venture capital, and higher education, the nation struggled to address its economic challenges. Two critical weaknesses emerged: deteriorating public education and unrealistic expectations about maintaining historical prosperity levels in an increasingly competitive global market. Detroit's decline reflected America's broader struggle to adapt to change, where past success bred complacency. Henry Ford's revolutionary mass production methods eventually became a barrier to innovation, while the rise of finance-focused executives prioritized quarterly profits over product quality. Meanwhile, Japanese manufacturers built a culture of continuous improvement that surpassed their American counterparts. The auto industry's dismissal of the 1973 oil crisis warnings exemplified its failure to recognize changing global realities. Key weaknesses emerged, favoring short-term profits over long-term competitiveness, declining quality standards, and inability to adapt to evolving consumer needs and energy concerns. Detroit's fate became a cautionary tale for American industry. Market dominance offers no protection from competition, and organizations must continuously improve and adapt to survive. The message remains clear: industries facing disruption must evolve or risk obsolescence.